You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for October 3rd, and I'm John Gibson. With me on a Sunday night, back from vacation, is my partner, Jim Allen. How are you doing on Pennant Sunday night?
Wow, that's a lot to digest. I'm kind of better in a better place than I was a half hour ago when I thought I'm going to lie down and sleep for 5 minutes.
Is that a wifey type 5 minutes or a hubby type 5 minutes?
No, that was like, I'm good. Actually, that 10-15 minute nap is actually my, so that's how, what I hang my hat on. I can, that's my specialty. But this one was like, somebody turned off the lights. I'm going like drowsy and moaning and get rid of this day. I was out of it. So, but caffeine fit, but my, I had some of my lifeblood, the juice,
the girlfriend,
the coffee.
It's the girlfriend. Yes.
Yeah. It's the juice of the coffee bean, baby. keeps me running.
All right. Well, send some my way, because this looks like this is going to be a late night. Anyway, we've got all kinds of excitement on the final day of the Pacific League. We've got one more game on Monday tomorrow. But on this week's show, we're going to talk pennant madness. We've got manager madness. We're going to look at some of the final standings and discuss the first round of the Climax Series in both leagues. So let's start swinging away.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so this just happened about, I don't know, 30 minutes ago. The Pacific League basically came to an end, and Jim was teasing me. It came to a climax, let's say.
Yes, no, climax is the perfect word to use because it's appropriate for a change.
For a change, I like that. Jim was teasing me, saying, you got what you wanted. The pennant decided on the final pitch of the season, or the regular season there, and it was in... where did the final pitch? The final pitch
was
came
in Chiba. In Chiba, yeah.
In Chiba, yeah, because the Oryx had won already, and they beaten the Eagles, and they were barely getting back to the dugout before, I think, in Sendai at Seimei Park, Miyagi, whatever they call it. They flipped on the screen up there, so the players, the Oryx players, looked at the screen and got to watch as in Chiba, the Lotte Marines overcame the really gutsy kind of performance, because they were down early in the game by a couple of runs, and they came back to beat the SoftBank Hawks and knocked them off of the perch and put them in second place and forced them to play through the first round of the playoffs to try to get to the Japan Series. So that was awesome. So it was an awesome night. It was really cool. Let's start with the Pacific League. We're going to talk about these races. Not too much going on in the Central League other than the third place finish. But the Eagles started out this season really well, and they were 18 games over 500. Haruki Nishikawa of the Eagles was flying high and carrying the team, and then he kind of stopped hitting and they kind of stopped winning, and they just never ever really got back up into the sky again and were able to fly, and they fell completely out of the playoff picture. And I believe it was on Friday night that Cebu mocked up that third spot in the Pacific League. So they got their playoff spot over the Eagles. But the Eagles played again. They didn't give up, or they didn't. None of these teams, and I was really proud, even the last place Dragons really played hard down the stretch, and they were trying to win these games. They weren't going out there treating them like games that didn't matter at all. They started Akira Neo today, the Dragons did, but all the teams really played hard, even if they were in the bottom three or the bottom half. So it was very admirable the way they finished the season. And we've got the Oryx Buffaloes. In fact, a longtime listener, Igoryu-san, he was going crazy on Twitter, because I don't even think he expected everything to fall right for the Oryx Buffaloes, for them to be able to win that game against the Eagles, for the Marines to come back the way they did against the Hawks, and for everything to fall into place for them to win. But it did. And I guess the first time since 1995-96, the Buffaloes are back-to-back Pacific League champions. Mm-hmm. And just an amazing, amazing second half run for them with, I don't know, you haven't said much here. Let me get in here. But they had a lot, just as much as any other team in the Pacific League or in NPB. They had a lot of hurdles and pitfalls and that they had to get through, and they made it through somehow to finish on top a second year. It's just incredible.
Well, they were one of, well, pretty much all the, most of the Pacific League teams. I think the Marines were, I'm trying to remember if any teams didn't have to cancel games, their own games because of COVID this year in the Pacific League, because it seems like everybody did. But they were hit hard. Yutaro Sugimoto was out, missed a whole huge chunk of the season after his big first full season mm-hmm. in Japan's majors in 2021. That was a big hole, but you know they scraped and you know they scraped along. We've talked about that all season, and their starting pitching went from it was really typical of the Oryx Buffaloes that we've seen, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, really good starting pitching, or frequently good. Well, let's just say frequently really good starting pitching.
Right.
Yeah. You know, there'd be some duds in there, but Yoshinobu Yamamoto had his kind of a typical season for him, you know, that we're expecting, even though he had some bumps. Got hammered a couple of times, which we're not used to. But no, it was quite amazing.
Yeah, I think a masterful job by Satoshi Nakajima, the manager. I'm really giving him props for this because, again, a lot of teams had injuries and, like you said, COVID and players who underperformed or didn't meet expectations or didn't meet last year's numbers per se. But he mixed and matched and kept, like we talked about recently, how he just kept throwing different pitchers tonight in a save situation. He goes to a guy I'm not that familiar with and was surprised mm-hmm. to see and thought he didn't have any saves at all, and then was surprised to learn that he had two coming into the game already, and right. That was Shota Abe. And mm-hmm. again, not really familiar with him. I've seen a lot of their guys. I just don't remember much about this particular pitcher, but he got the outs with no problem, and they, you know, walk away with the or dance off the field actually with the title there in Sendai. And actually, they didn't dance off the field with the title because they had to wait.
Which was, well, there were some gyrations on the field, but it wasn't off. It wasn't right after in the. It wasn't the instant that their game ended.
Right.
So yeah. I noticed something about Abe when he saved his first game. He was the seventh Oryx pitcher to get a save this year, which was high, I think, in both leagues.
Hmm.
And it was kind of, you know, that was their thing. Really, it's funny that, you know, I think with Nakajima, that's one of the things, his catchers, he does, I won't say mimics the Swallows manager, Shingo Takatsu, because Takatsu tends to have a more established relief sequence. Mm-hmm. Sequence of relievers late in the game, but it's more like what the Swallows did last year when, you know, one guy's not getting it done. I got more guys who can get it done. I'm not worried.
Yeah, we'll make more.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the guys are there. I trust the guys I've got on the roster. And I think that's probably the big thing that they've got going, is that idea that there's nobody on the team I don't trust. I think that's when I see the Buffaloes, that's the feeling I get. This is the opposite of some managers. I don't need to name them because you probably, you know, if you're a longtime listener, you probably know who I'd go to, but they're guys on the roster I just don't trust in any situation, but they keep them on the roster for some reason. You know, it's like they're in the doghouse and it's really old school. And But Nakajima is the absolute opposite of that. And I think that's really the new way in Japan when you see guys like Takatsu and guys like Nakajima and guys like Daisuke Miura. And I guess not guys like Kazuyoshi Tatsunami.
Right.
But anyway, that's that. And I have a couple of notes just about the pennant winning. Now the Buffaloes and the Hawks had exactly the same record.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Buffaloes won on a tiebreaker. Now the tiebreaker is kind of a new thing. First of all, we've never had a pennant tie in the history of Japanese pro baseball.
Huh.
First time ever. Now the Central League for years and years and years.
You're talking about winning percentage, right?
That is absolutely correct. We've never had two teams with exactly the same record finish at the top of the league.
Okay.
In any league since 1936. So that was new. And the Central League used to have a tie-breaking game. I don't know what the Pacific League used to do, but they've both... here's typical Central League old school stuff.
Okay.
The first Pacific League tiebreaker is head-to-head play. Okay. The first Central League tiebreaker, because you use the Central League, is the most wins. Well, I want to ask you, if two teams have exactly the same winning percentage, how often does one team have more wins than the other? And the answer is about never.
about
never. I think it is possible that, you know, one team could have no ties and another team could have like 18 ties.
Mm-hmm.
And they could conceivably have the same winning percentage, but the answer is pretty much zero. But because it's the Central League and they have this anal retentive fetish about wins.
Hashtag high heat.
That's what their first tiebreaker. It's like their fantasy tiebreaker because it doesn't really exist. But then their second one is head to head. So if they ever had it again, it would end up that way. So that was that. And it's of course, as we talked about a while ago, the possibility that this is the first time since 1992 and 1993 that two teams have faced each other in consecutive years. Have won pennants in the same in their the two league champions were the same league champions 2 years in a row.
Gotcha.
Okay. Now, back in the day before the playoffs, that meant they faced each other in the Japan Series, and I'll tell you, it's kind of like, wow, it's just something that rarely happens, and it's not. It's just something that that is now rare, because it used mm-hmm. to be happened all the time.
Sure.
So the Oryx, the Oryx Buffaloes forerunners, the Hankyu Braves, and the Yomiuri Giants, I think played the Japan Series against each other 5 times in 6 years in one stretch.
Mm.
People must have been really pleased with that one.
No, thank you. I will not sign up for that.
Okay. Well, no choice. No playoffs.
No choice. That's right.
Okay. So.
Yeah, that's some awesome stuff. And again, I did bring up the Eagles right away because it the kind of remarkable turnaround that they had. In mm-hmm. fact, I think they said that no team had gone from 18 games over 500 to finishing below 500 in the season and missing, you know, obviously missing the playoffs. The playoffs haven't been around that entirely that long, so that's not a big surprise there. But I think, you know, Seibu effectively knocked them out on Wednesday. And this was a game, of course, I'm sure you didn't see, but Tatsuya Imai for the Lions threw 8 scoreless innings and I think was the best game I've ever seen him throw. And some guy named Shota Hiranuma, a player acquired in a trade midseason last year, and he hits his second career home run and his first one in 3 seasons off Takayuki Kishi, and that was the only run in the game. And it was a real pressure-packed game, and it was really fun. But that to me signaled kind of the end of the Eagles. And I'm not don't hold me to the Friday that I said, because it might have been Thursday that they were officially knocked out. I don't remember. But and then the Hawks had their breakdowns here at the end. The team that we have talked about, it usually is a good finisher, a great finisher, and lost these last two games. And in both, they had relievers. I think on Saturday it was Koya Huji who gave up a walk-off home run to Hotaka Yamakawa and the Lions on Saturday. And then tonight, Keisuke Izumi was just inconsolable after he gave up a home run that was basically a three-run home run to Koki Yamaguchi. Mm-hmm. He's kind of a breakout slugger for Lotte this year. 16 home runs for him, and you know, just not enough at bats and not enough opportunities early when they were giving other guys chances, and that was part of the problem with the inconsistency of the Marines, and so they struggled. But some really great games to close out the stretch. But again, big home runs late in games that we don't usually we see the SoftBank Hawks hitting, not giving up, and they had their guys up at the plate. Despaigne was up at the plate late in the game. He didn't get that big hit. Yurisbel Graciel, as the sirens ring out in the background, had an opportunity. He didn't have a great at bat in that particular situation, but you know, it's not over for the Hawks. Somebody's got to knock them off. They have to get through two rounds of the playoffs to get to the Japan Series, but they're quite capable. It just is different to see them lose those games instead of come through the way they have been.
Right. I mean, the Hawks, they won two Japan Series as the second seed when the Cebu Lions won back to Japan pennants and didn't make it to the Japan Series. So I wouldn't put the Hawks out of it yet. We're not into the stage where we're going to see back-to-back, another set of back-to-back Japan Series contestants. But,
sure.
But I... You know, I like I think I picked Oryx to finish fourth this year.
I think I did as well.
And
I can't remember. It's been so long.
It has been a long time, and my short-term memory is pretty much non-existent. So,
well, we can ask Coaster Freak because he said he went back and listened to the show.
Yeah, he likes that. He does like that stuff because, we'll see. So it's going to be the Lions are because of the Lions sort of home runs from the guy we never expected and a home run from the guy we expected. And they're in third place and they'll go play in Fukuoka when their climax, I don't know what you want to call it, the pre-climax or the well, because, you know, as I say, the climax series ain't the climax of nothing. You know, it's the quarterfinals and the semifinals for the Japan Series. It's, you know, that's like calling the NFL, you know, the NFL, the conference championships, the climax. It's like, okay, we're done. We can go home.
Well, you know, in the 80s, it used to be that way because the Super Bowls were so boring.
Yeah.
Always blowouts.
Yeah, I remember that. It's like, who's the AFC going to send to the Super Bowl and lose by 50 points? Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I did watch football. See, I just proved it.
Yes, you did. You used to. Yeah, I can tell. But again, just to talk about Oryx a little bit now, and mm-hmm. you talked about how their records were the same. And yeah, both teams had 76 victories, and the Hawks scored a lot more runs, 555 runs scored to only 471 allowed. And the Buffaloes didn't score 500. They allowed 458. They scored 490. I don't know about runs scored being such a big deal. It just seems to me, it's just weird how they were able to come back and they were so consistent in the second half of the season. They didn't lose a bunch of games in a row. They lost. Again, we have to talk about the MVP, and I kept assuming it was going to be SoftBank so that they were going to shove Yuki Yanagita out there out front and say, hey, you know, you're going to be the MVP. Now I'm thinking... you might have gotten it right. They're either just they'll look at Yoshinobu Yamamoto as the MVP, or they'll give it to Masataka Yoshida.
Yep, that could happen.
That could happen as well. So
my off the cuff vote would go to Yoshida right now. I don't think he'll win because they'll say, "Wow, he's the best pitcher, and pitchers are most important, so he must be the MVP."
Yeah, he's leading. He not only won the triple crown in pitching, he won the quadruple crown because he's got winning percentage too.
Wow, Cole, that's right. Cole, our operators are standing by now, and if you call, we'll throw in the winning percentage title.
I'm wondering how many times a pitcher wins the most games in a particular league but loses enough to not have the best winning percentage as well. But I guess it must happen because Pro Yaku News said it, said it with the quadruple crown. So I'm like, all right, man, winning percentage. Don't think that quite qualifies as one of those crown things. It might be a bracelet or a necklace or something, but not a crown.
we've got one in the Central League this year too. I think he's Munetaka Murakami is up there as the quintuple.
I don't
crown?
Know.
Yeah, he's gonna have a
Quint
few
twisted right now. What's happening with your mouth?
Now, well, let's not go there.
Well, that's your brain. That's something else that's twisted. But no, or is that me?
You got me. I'm trying to process all this stuff. I'm jet lagged, dude. Cut me some slack, Jack.
All right. So, but yeah, I'm looking. They were able to stay really consistent over the second half, especially these last 2 months when they needed to get these victories. And no surprise, I think it was kind of I was looking at this game when they were facing Masahiro Tanaka tonight, and he started out really well. And I'm thinking, who is the best pitcher to start for the Buffaloes tonight? And I thought they nailed it with Daiki Tajima as the starter because he's left-handed and the Eagles had been struggling with left-handed pitching, and most of their guys who are their top hitters are left-handed. But Tanaka was really on his game early, and then all of a sudden that kind of turned. So they've been getting the hits they need, and they've been using different players, and a lot of these players we'd seen in the past, 3 to 5 years, who weren't getting the job done or didn't get the job done at that time, they got the job done down the stretch. And particularly tonight, they had some really good at bats. They worked some walks and they got on base. And Kodai Sano, the outfielder who I think we mocked because he dropped the ball 1 year in center field that was basically right to him, and somehow he figured out a way to drop it and help lose a game one night. And Masahiro Nishino, who has been out there, making mistake after mistake, so to speak, and not getting the job done. Koji Oshiro, a guy who is out there in the past, 3 to 5 years out there, making mistakes that we could obviously see, whether they were base running mistakes or fielding mistakes, and not necessarily errors, just throwing to the wrong bag or, throwing a ball that they should have put in their pocket and not tried to get the out, and exacerbating bad situations, whatever it was. And they were all out there tonight getting the job done and making it happen for the Buffaloes. And you could just see so much growth in the team. And that's one thing that I just had noticed down the stretch is, they didn't throw games away. I mean, I'm not saying they didn't make every play and they were perfect, but they certainly didn't throw games away like they had been in the past. And again, I just have to credit Nakajima, the manager, for doing such I'm saying it's a spectacular job because they literally came out of nowhere.
Yeah, well, I think I want to give props to the whole organization because they have gone from this kind of, you don't know baseball, we know baseball. In fact, I know, the president would say, I know baseball better than the hit our GM, the head of our baseball operations does. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take the guys he hired and have them go work in food services at Osaka Dome and things like that. That's how the Buffaloes were run for years. And they had they've always had very good, I think they've always had very good scouting in terms of especially picking up pitching. And the problem, however, has been this thing about position players where, and I guess I've talked about it more than I need to, but they used to be small guys who knew how to play baseball, you know, who were basically, they built a team out of guys who were small and compact and wiry and fast to some degree, mostly middle infielders who could play any position on the field.
And forced to at times, right? They say, you go play the outfield. Because yeah. Shuhei Fukuda,
That's correct. He was their second baseman. And then they moved him over there, and Doichi Adachi was sort of the poster boy for that thing. And a small guy who, you know, he basically knew how to play, but then they had all these other things going on. Not only were they small and underpowered, but they had other things, you know, they had all those front office issues that guys didn't trust the front office to do anything right because they were never on the scene. You know, the front office's focus was less about winning and more about kicking their rivals out of positions of influence within the club. Everybody knew it. So, but now we've got a team that's, of course, we've still got, you know, some of the old managers are hanging around in the front office, but where they kind of do less damage. And they've got Shigetoshi Hasegawa working as the team's top consultant, and he's a really he's somebody people listen to, even if it's just telling them how to play blackjack at the Winter Games when they were in Las Vegas. Sorry guys, you know, reporters see all kinds of things, so. Yeah, things have changed. And if you look, I mentioned, I think 2 years ago, that by their heights and weights, the Buffaloes were basically the lightest and skinniest team in NPB. And
well, they're heavyweights now.
Yeah, they've got some guys who were big, who got some power. They've got some guys. I mean, Yuma Tongu, and who's slugging catcher, and now he's playing first base for him. He's built. He's powerful, and of course Masataka Yoshida is the poster boy for that. But Yutaro Sugimoto is another big guy.
Yeah, I mean,
they're going for guys.
Snatcher. I meant the heavyweights of the Pacific League. But yes.
But they've gone from, you know, thinking that baseball is won by stick insects to baseball is won by guys with a variety of skills, including physical strength.
Did you say stick insects?
Yeah, because that's what I used to call them, the work stick insects.
Okay. All right. Well, congratulations, the 14th. And I don't know how you count all the, you know, with the merger and all that stuff, but the 14th title for the Oryx Buffaloes and back-to-back titles at that. So let's move on to the Central League, which was not very much drama. I think right after you left, maybe the day after you left.
It was the day after I left. They won the game they needed to get to the to right on the verge of pennant, and then they did it the next day.
Yes, so your Central League back-to-back champion, Yakult Swallows. And, you know, I was trying to get interviews this week. Thank goodness that we didn't. You know, I put out 3 feelers and requests and didn't get anybody back in time to do an interview. But we got so much tonight that we don't need it. But the Swallows, just another strong job. And the thing about that game is that it was a scoreless game, so they ended up winning 1-0 over the Bay Stars. And this game is this back and forth 1-0 game. If you can imagine, I mean, guys, there weren't that many runners. I think the Bay Stars had 3 hits. The Swallows had 5 hits, but it just seemed back and forth because as soon as someone got on, it seemed like, okay, what's going to happen? You know, where are we going now? Who's going to do what? So it was full of drama for a 1-0 game that was scoreless up until the last inning. And I think what's most fascinating was a guy who comes in as a defensive replacement ends up getting the game-winning hit. And I'm not sure if Santana, Domingo Santana, is going to be okay, but he had some kind of lower body leg injury. And so Kazuya Maruyama is the guy who comes up and is basically a defensive replacement, and he gets the hit going the opposite way, hits a ball in the left field. And I was surprised. I honestly thought, well, the Swallows, they're coming off of last year winning. They're not going to be that emotional, and it's not that big a deal. And, I mean, Tetsuto Yamada was crying.
Yep.
the guys were really happy and really emotional, and I'm like, wow, this really meant what it means to every... It's just like Tony Barnett told us at the beginning of the season. You know, you wipe that last year happened last year. The standard is winning, and we're going to go out to try to win. And it really is that way. And I was just kind of surprised at that whole thing and how that just unfolded before our eyes with all the emotion, because I didn't think, you know, you think winning it once, you know, you go through it and it's so fresh, you know, back-to-back years. And not to mention Munetaka Murakami, who really is the guy who got them to this point with all the contributions that he has made from game to game. And then he hits this home run to tie this milestone, and his swing has been god-awful since then. I think he had a really good swing and either a double or a single yesterday on Saturday, and then he didn't play today. And they have they play the game tomorrow, the lone game, the last game of regular season game of MPB's
schedule. He ain't going to play tomorrow neither.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. But, I mean, I would try to get him in. I think, I don't know. He's got to try to get that record somehow. And it's not really a record. It's kind of a made-up record in that it's Japanese-born.
Which is nothing, because nobody cares, because Japanese-born is irrelevant. Yeah, I mean, it's something... I didn't know this as much as I did, you know, a week ago. And Bob Whiting and I were talking about, well, he was informing me and I was informing him. I kind of keep track better of the recent stuff than he does. I keep track of the recent stuff better than he does. And he's more fluent in stuff that when he was here before the invention of the wheel. And he, you know, he told me something, because they're calling, of course. I've gone on about Sadaharo's citizenship, and now he wasn't a Japanese citizen, and I knew that, but I didn't know that when he hit 55 home runs in 143 games, by the way, in 1964, that he was registered as a foreign player, because it used to be the only thing that counted was citizenship then. And that they changed the rules 12 years later, 12 or 13 years later, when Isao Harimoto, who is a South Korean national, joined the Giants as a free agent. And he refused to change his net. The Giants said, and you and I have both worked for Yomiuri, how familiar is this thing? Well, why don't you just change your nationality to make things easier on us? And Harimoto said,
why don't you just change your face?
Exactly.
Make it easier on me.
Exactly. Why don't you have like find some humanity in there? Or is that a lost cause? Because there ain't none. So Yomiuri, perplexed with the problem of what to do when they have an American import, and that that's only two players allowed on the entire roster, and they've got an American import, and they've got this guy named Sadaharo, and now they've got this South Korean guy. What are they going to do? Well, that's a big problem. Well, if you're Yomiuri, of course, it's not a big problem. You just get the NPB to change the rules for you. So they changed the rules to make any player born in Japan and who played amateur baseball in Japan a domestically registered player. But so O, in his final years of his career, was a Japanese registered player. And so he falls into the category of Vladimir Ballantyne, who finished his career as a Japanese registered player, but has set his home run record as a foreign player. And O is exactly the same boat. But 55 is the number because, well, 55 is the number. Not really for any reason other than 55 is the number.
And that's a great nugget. Thank you for adding that. And I remember you sent me a message about that. But I kept telling people at the office, I'm like, well, you know, this is really not that big a deal. It's not really a record. You can't call it a record. You can say that, you know, he has the most home runs or has a tie for the most home runs as a Japanese-born player. But that's really iffy,
who cares?
Too. And I said that wouldn't even be the record on his team anyway. Right. So, you know, what are we doing here? And they wanted to make it like Aaron Judge watch. Let's watch every at bat. Let's see if he gets 61. I'm not 61. Let's see if he gets 56. And I'm like, why?
I have to disagree in that. It isn't, you're right on. It is not a record. I mean, if they want to go like domestically registered players, which is actually a category in Japanese baseball, the most by a Japanese registered player, a registered Japanese player, was 52, which was Katsuya Nomura in 1963 and Hiromitsu Ochiai in one of his Triple Crown seasons in 1985. So Murakami blew past those. But so you're right, it isn't a record. But I think you're wrong when you're saying it's not a big deal, because whether we like it or not, it is a big deal in Japan.
Yeah, they wanted to make a big deal out of it.
Yeah,
but
it
obviously
shouldn't be
Yoko
a big
doesn't
deal.
Care because they took, you know, they sat him down a day after he had a couple of good at bats.
Yeah. Well, there's of course the reason for that, and I'll have to, in fact, maybe we should check, since this will come out Monday. So right now, he's got 153 hits and 483 at-bats.
You think about the batting average?
Yeah, because that's the only thing that matters. Yes, okay, yeah, he's got 153.
Yeah, he was not in danger in that.
153. Well, he is now. He's got that. And then Yohei Oshima, who's second on the list, but his games, he has no more games to play. He can go 0-3. He can go, Murakami can go 0-3. So my guess is they're going to give him 3 at-bats if he doesn't get a hit on Monday.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah, that makes sense. So, if he gets a hit, then he can
so
get back up.
So he, and maybe they just wanted to give him a day off. And, you know, last game of the season will be really emotional. And so we'll give him a day off and three at-bats to try to hit a home run.
Which he will be swinging for, but good luck to him on that. But the Swallows again had a great season. I think the Tigers also get some props from me because they had one of the worst starts I've ever seen in MPB for a team that ended up, you know, finishing third. And
right,
I think
they're the mirror image of the Rocktown Eagles.
Right,
because
right.
They
were almost
that,
20 games under 500. Am
sure,
I correct. Yeah, and
sure,
then
they finished third, and did they lead the league at all? I guess they didn't.
They did not.
But they were in there. They were close for a brief time.
Yeah, if they didn't stumble at the end, because they had such a really good stretch, if they didn't stumble at the end, they would have finished with a better than 500 record. Now, I don't know if that would have gotten them into second place, but it would have been really good. So, so congratulations to them. And again, the DeNA Bay Stars also deserve a lot of props. And I really like that team going into the playoffs just because how steady the whole team is. And the Bay Stars weren't great early on, and then, you know, the switch seemed to go on. The second year manager, Daisuke Miyota, was making all the right moves like Tom Cruise, and they just kept winning games, and they look really strong going in. I like their pitching. I like the offense, and hopefully they can, you know, for Bay Stars fans, they can put it together in the playoffs and not go the other way, but get better and figure things out. They are playing the Hanshin Tigers. They get them at home, so that should be really fun.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the Bay Stars, yeah, they were certainly a second-half team. They didn't start particularly well. They went through a few iterations with their bullpen. Mm-hmm. Yasuaki Yamasaki basically became the sole... He was sort of a 50-50 closer at the start of the season. He was sharing the job as he had for much of last year.
Oh, I thought you meant he was on one day and
bad. No. He was he was that too. But last year he was sharing the job because he got hammered pretty much most of the times he was used until the very end of the season, and then now he was splitting the workload, and then he just sort of calmed down and, you know, he stopped walking people, and that seemed to work for him. So that was, yeah, that was a huge thing for the Bay Stars, that their bullpen really gelled.
Mm-hmm.
For, and of course, I can't say enough about guys like Hiromu Ise, who's just a marvelous little, I mean, it's not, you know, it's basically a really, really good fastball and a couple other kind of okay pitches, but he's a gutsy pitcher. And, you know, that's, I look at their bullpen and I kind of see that, a little bit of that Swallows Buffaloes thing going on where, you know, I'm going to throw this guy out there and I trust him and, you know, let him get the job done until he shows me he can't. And then I've got more guys I trust. So it's like all positive. That's what I get from watching these teams play, is positive vibes and none of the, this isn't the way we used to play back in the day kind of thing. Although Takatsu does give off that vibe now and then. I'm an old school guy. He doesn't act like it, but he talks like it sometimes.
Yes, the language, the messaging. Yeah. You're right. All right, making a four-seam transition, we've got a lot of managerial news. I don't even know where to start. I was going to start with Hanshin turning its back to the future is what I wrote in the notes.
Which is good.
And that was that Akinobu Okada, the skipper who led them to the last pennant.
That's correct.
The pennant in 2005 is coming back as the manager to replace Akihiro Yano. That announcement came down this past week. And, you know, the thing about Okada, I always joked about him because when I think it was right around the time that I started at this at the Yomiuri, I was just in terms of my Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
I was just coming around to being able to understand old man talk. I could understand older women, you know, grand aged women.
Yeah.
But men, they just kind of, they talk choppy. They sound like they got food in their mouths. It was really hard for me to get what they were saying all the time. And I was just getting good enough in Japanese when I took this gig that I could understand. And then I met Okada, who just sounded like he's always got something in his mouth. And he reminded me of the 70s McDonald's commercials, that the character never spoke a word, just mumbled and grumbled. The Grimace. You remember that? Oh, yeah? The big purple thing.
as embarrassing as it sounds, I do remember the evil Grimace.
That's what Okada reminded me of. You guys could look that up on YouTube. And I would go into the scrum and try to pick out what this dude is saying. And I'm like, "What? Are there any words in there? Is he opening his mouth? What is going on here?" But he actually helped develop my Japanese because, you know, you're on assignment. You go to cover a game, whether it was in Osaka or wherever, and you're getting a quote from the manager. You don't have time to ask anybody. So you got to record the thing and then listen to it 50 times to get your comment in and to get it into the story. So I had to really concentrate, but he helped improve my Japanese for sure. But I can't remember anything in particular that Okada is good at doing. You know, is he a defensive-minded manager? Does he improve hitting? Is his game management really good? Is it some of the above, none of the above? What's he good at for, you know, for the Tigers to turn around and go back to him after so much time has gone by?
Well, his teams had pretty good offenses generally. Of course, he had Tomoaki Kanemoto and Takashi Toritani and Akihiro Yano in your lineup every day.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, so that helps. But he was, he's an interesting guy. And I'll say it again. I think his real strength is that he protects his players from the media.
Okay.
He doesn't let the he treats the media like puppies, like little puppies. You know, it's like, you know, no, we're not going there. Okay, you're doing it again. Stop it. I'm not going to give you what you want. Doesn't matter how much you cry and whine. I'm not going to give you what you want. This is my show. And that's how he was. And he'd laugh and he'd play with the media, but he wouldn't give them nothing.
That's an excellent tool to have in the tool bag if you're going to
manage the Tigers.
Yeah,
being able to deal good naturedly with the media and have a good relationship with the media, despite telling them to,
go eat your cereal,
go do something obscene with their close relative, which we get to sometimes. But he doesn't do that. He's completely unflappable when it comes to the Tigers media, and that's a very rare commodity. Of course, Senichi Hoshino had it because nobody would dare to talk back to him, but he had that too, and Okada had it, and that's really the thing for them. Other guys have struggled with it. When the team goes bad, you know, they're asked, pretty much the Tigers media demands a human sacrifice, and he ain't playing.
Yeah, so, but that was, you know, that was a few days ago or a long time ago, it seems, because we've had a lot of managerial news since then. I think right after that, Big Boss came out and said he had a secret that he was going to divulge, and so he did, saying that, and I think this was, again, don't quote me on the day, but sometime during the week, in the middle of the week, he says he's going to hang up the Big Boss jersey, and it made it sound like he was retiring, and he went through all these this kind of ceremonial thing on the field after the game. And what he really wanted to say was that he's going to use his name, Tsuyoshi Shinjo, and Shinjo will be the name on the jersey next year. He's going to retire the Big Boss name. I like that. I think I'll be able to take him a little bit more seriously. And plus, the marketing and the branding didn't go over as well. He wrote it as one word. I saw lots of people, followers on Twitter and whatever, they all wrote it the right way, which would be two words. And but that really wasn't, his name was officially registered as one word, but, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter anymore. He has retired that. And I guess starting tomorrow on Monday, because he did have a game today on Sunday in which he used the Big Boss name, he won't be using that anymore. And then today, again, I wasn't watching. I did have the Hiroshima Chunichi game on TV, but I wasn't listening. And after that game ended, Hiroshima skipper Shinji Sataoka announced, you know, again, after getting shut out. How ironic that he's shut out by the Dragons, who win 3-0, and the three runs symbolize something that the Dragons were not able to do this season, which was average 3 runs per game. They averaged 2.89 runs per game. I did the math. So they scored 3 runs. So that would make me want to retire too, if that was the last game of the season and you give up 3 runs to the Dragons, who had so much trouble scoring 2 runs or even 1 run all season long. But he said he was stepping down as the manager. And I would imagine he told the team before today, but that team will be in search of a new skipper. And then just as we were going on, Mike, just as the pennant was being decided and afterward, Tadahito Iguchi of the Lotte Marines who the Marines knocking off SoftBank in that finale, he said he would be stepping down and leaving the organization. Not only stepping down, but leaving the organization. So I guess he's not even going to hang around and go upstairs for some cushy front office job. So a lot of movement, a lot of different, well, we're going to have different managers, obviously, but a lot of surprise moves here at the end of the season. Which strikes you as the most, including the bringing back Okada?
I've said my piece with Okada. I mean, we had talked about Takashi Torikawa coming back, and I think, you know, that may be the phase two of this move. But yeah, Sasaoka, I think I always got the feeling that he took the job as a personal favor to the Carp owner, that his heart never was, I think he gave it his best shot, but it really wasn't something he always seemed to have a trouble having a philosophy of how to do things. Mm-hmm. And that was consistent. So I'm not surprised that he's leaving. And my first, of course, concern is, you know, who am I going to kick around now? I can't make jokes about Sasaoka's weird things he does anymore. But there's plenty of guys to rip on, so I guess I'll be okay. You know, don't worry about me, folks. I'll be okay without Shinji Sasaoka, who, I'll be honest, I shouldn't say I want to rip on Shinji Sasaoka in person, because I think he's a good guy. If if secondhand smoke doesn't bother you too much, he's a really good guy. And he was absolutely one of my favorite pitchers when I first came to Japan. So I do like him, but yeah, as a managing, he never seemed to have to be where he wanted in that respect. And he didn't look like, you know, his body language was all kind of like, why am I here? So that's that. Tadahito Iguchi, so on brand for him. I'm doing things my way, and that's the way it is. And so for him to say the team had reportedly wanted him back, and he wouldn't do a Hatsuhiko Tsuji and abide by what the team wanted. And he said, I'm out of here. I'm done. He said, fifth place, this is my fault. And we of course know that ain't true. But I pretty much liked him as a manager. I didn't have a problem with the managing. I thought their talent issues were otherwise. But my concern is, are the Marines going to stick with their Roki Sasaki? You know, this is the thing that's interesting to me. Now, they wanted to keep Iguchi, but are they going to stick with the Roki Sasaki, let's take care of his body program for year four? Or are they going to say, kid, we're paying you to play baseball, and who cares about what happens to you in the long run?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much of that whole handle with care or kid glove approach was Iguchi or Masato Yoshii, but I would like to see Yoshii be the manager, that's for sure.
I think so too, and I'm interested in that. I have Yoshii, who has built his career basically telling people why he doesn't want to work for this manager or that manager. Okay, well, he's built a career telling people twice why he would never again work for Hideki Kuriyama. So
all the while going back to working for Hideki
Kuriyama. Yeah, well, he did it twice, and once was not enough. He went back for a second helping. So I don't know. I think he likes his current job is actually pitching coordinator. And I wouldn't be surprised if they just keep him in that role to look over, you know, to take care of Sasaki, because he's their meal ticket right now. He's the one people come to pay to see. So who would be the next manager? I haven't a clue. Maybe it might be Takashi Toritani. Who knows? He's a former Marine now.
Yes, he is. All right. Well, let's look at the PLCS and the CLCS. So let's start in the Pacific League. We got the Lions taking on the Hawks, and I had written in Buffaloes here. I had this thing all figured out, didn't I?
You did indeed.
The monkey wrench is in the building. I think the Lions with Kona Takahashi at the top, I think that first game is obviously pivotal, but I think it's really important for the Lions because Takahashi's really their big horse, and if he gets them that first game, I think they can piece together a game to get to get through to the next round. If he loses that game, I think it puts more pressure on the other guys, and I'm not sure who can step up. Although Tatsuya Imai, like I said, he threw the best game I think I've seen him throw as a pro this past week. This 1-0 game that they won against Kishi and the Eagles. So I could see him pitching in game two and doing a good job. But I don't know who would pitch that second game. And I don't know if it went to game three that who would pitch for the Lions. And conversely, I think Senga just pitched. Kodai Senga just pitched for the Hawks. But I think since it's next weekend, he gets enough rest to start that first game. But after that, I'm not really sure if it's, Tsuyoshi Wada. I'm not sure if it's, I don't know who the Hawks go with. They've got, not to say that they don't have a lot of pitching. I just don't know which guy they feel most comfortable with.
Yeah, they've got a lot of guys who are really useful. I mean, the least useful of their big starters is Shuichi Ishikawa. And he's one of these guys who, if he can throw the ball where he intends to with his normal arm action, he's a threat to throw a no hitter.
Right.
Just, those games happen about once a year.
Not as often as the Hawks would like to see him, I'm sure. So
No. And it's not been a particularly happy year. They've been more often than that he's been falling behind in every count and missing everywhere. So, yeah, now Higashihama's a good bet, and I think I've really liked Yugo Bando quite a bit this year. He's had some. He doesn't have these lights-out tools.
Right.
But
he started tonight for them, yeah.
But he throws strikes. I mean, that's the thing with Higashihama. He throws strikes. This is what Shuichi Ishikawa is kind of can't do. And, I don't want to rag on people who don't throw strikes. Kodai Senga is not the biggest strike thrower in the world either. He strikes people out, but he doesn't throw it in the zone much. So
Colin Ray could start for. I mean, they have
Colin Ray, although he's kind of in the bullpen now.
Yeah,
I would think. And Tsuyoshi Wada. The thing about Tsuyoshi Wada is you can throw him anytime. So my guess is they're going to save Tsuyoshi Wada for a elimination game, and. Okay. So game three, if they need it, and then if they don't need it, save him to start the second, the second phase of the final stage of the climax series.
Right. And these two teams mirror each other in that they have a lot of speed. They play good, strong defense, and they have enough guys to hit power who can take you out of the park. So I think it's a closer series than we might, have first or maybe even at first glance you might think. It's going to be compelling stuff. They're going to be playing Fukuoka. Wish I could go. I'm probably going to go to Yokohama since, it's so close. So I'm thinking about going out there. We have a press holiday on Sunday, so I'll be able to go to a game. So I think I'm going to
go. The managers, they were rivals. Well, I Hiroshi Fujimoto was kind of a second baseman, third baseman, kind of a borderline starter utility infielder guy, and Hatsuhiko Tsuji was a Golden Glove second baseman, but they played, they're contemporaries, although Fujimoto was infected at a young age with, the sacrifice bunt virus.
Hashtag high heat.
And Tsuji somehow, I think it was all the serious inoculation, the serious the virus he was exposed to as a youth that he's inoculated against, and he doesn't believe that sacrifice bunts win every single game. So that's kind of interesting because there's that difference. But they're both they're both defense oriented, as you said, speed oriented. It will be fun. I mean, the Lion, neither of these teams is really, really settled. We've got a couple of guys who are a threat to hit home runs, you know, at every instant. I mean, Hitoki Yamakawa and Yuki Inagita. And after that, it's going to be a lot of, you know, making contact and playing good defense and throwing the ball where you're supposed to throw it.
Sure. And I, you know, like I said, we talked about these two pitchers who gave up home runs on back-to-back nights. And basically those were the difference in these games that ultimately they failed to win and failed to win the pennant. But, you know, these are games, these guys are bullpen pitchers. They'll get over it. I know we saw them in tears both nights. Both guys had to be assisted off the field, let's say, because they were so emotional about it. And Izumi was even worse tonight because he sat on the bench and one of the coaches came over and was patting him on the shoulder, but he just was a mess. He was a puddle after the game. And then it was sad to see, but these guys get over it because you have to. And sure. They have enough time between games, I think, that he'll be fine. So we'll certainly that'll be some fun. Like I said, I'm thinking about going to Yokohama, where we will see the Bay Stars and the Tigers. Now, these teams, they don't mirror each other in that the Bay Stars seem to make all those routine plays and they make some spectacular plays once in a while, but they pretty much catch the ball consistently. Whereas the Tigers, you really never know if they're going to catch it or when they catch it, where it's going to go when they throw it or when they throw it, if the other guy's going to catch it on the other end of it. Very exciting to watch them field routine ground balls or pop flies or whatever it is that they can't catch or can't make outs on. They don't have as much power. I think that I'm not sure what the numbers say, but it seems to me that Tigers have not hit as many home runs, but of course they don't. They play in that big park, right? So we shouldn't see as many home runs. But I don't think, and DeNA has 116 home runs. The Tigers have hit 84, so there's a big discrepancy in that respect. But I think in that park, they're going to be playing at Yokohama. I think other guys are threats. They just really haven't consistently hit a lot of home runs. I don't think it matters if they, you know, home or away. They just don't have a lot of power in that lineup in terms of producing home runs. They have some raw power, and the foreign guys definitely have some power. We just haven't seen it manifest itself in actual home runs in games.
Yeah. So, well, Tyler Austin, are we talking about the Bay Stars now? I'm sorry, I was distracted.
No, go ahead. And I was talking about the Tigers, but go ahead. Yeah, Tyler.
Yeah, no, we do have that. The Tigers have an issue, you know, who are we going to, you know, how can we get the import bats into the lineup? They really don't know. Amelio Rojas Jr. has been inconsistent. Jeffrey Marte, I think he's hurt again. You know, we just don't know who's going to go with it. There's always... with the Tigers, as you said, there's a fear one of the guys is going to drop the ball or throw the ball away. And it seems to be...
one or more.
Yeah, one or more. Or, you know, sometimes you may hit the jackpot and get five or more. But the thing is that it's and I don't really think it's become a thing. I don't think it ever was a thing, but it's become a thing. You know, it's one of those things like the Tigers go out there saying, okay, don't throw the ball in the stands and that's where it's going, you know, and make the routine plays and oops, you know, don't mess it up. And, you know, the Tigers' mantra on defense is don't make something that's going to look bad, which is, of course, always a recipe for good positive thinking.
Yeah, but that's like telling the person who's nervous, hey, don't be nervous.
Don't be nervous, indeed.
It doesn't help. It has never helped in the history of nervousness.
Sounds like you know about that one. Okay, there's that, and I agree with you about the Bay Stars. The Bay Stars, their numbers are a little deceptive because they didn't have they didn't have Tyler Austin for most of the season, and he's really not been a factor. He's one of the best players in NPB when he's healthy. He hasn't been healthy all year. He hasn't been able to play the field since, I think, just maybe a couple of games at the start of the season. Neftali Soto is back, but he's not playing consistently, hasn't been hitting consistently. So that's, but he, you know, he was the team at the beginning of the season. Also, the bullpen was still sort of in flux. Mm-hmm. They have played better. They also got off to a horrible kind of start, a horrible kind of first half, but they bounced back. And I think they showed the resilience they showed was in, you know, showing that they weren't out of it. You know, they should have been out of this pennant race. They shouldn't, yeah. They shouldn't be in the playoffs, but they have adequate starting pitching. They have an adequate bullpen. They're an adequate team. They're not, you know, they're not going to blow people. They are going to blow people away on occasion, but they're an adequate team. And they, you know, I like the manager. I like Daisuke Miura. I like Akihiro Yano as well. It's going to be kind of a fun series, and it isn't going to be in Yokohama. So I think whether that's going to help the Bay Stars from coming, you know, they're not going to think, well, the Tigers are making errors, so we can too, kind of thing that happens at Koshien Stadium, where, you know, it's just like all bets are off. But I think right now the Bay Stars offense is I don't want to say they're consistent because they're not, but you know, Keita Sano is an offensive threat, and Shugo Maki's an offensive threat, and then they got a bunch of ordinary players. Although Masayuki Kuwahara can really kill you if he's on one of his games. You know, one of those games where he goes, you know, 4-for-5 with a walk and scores 3 runs and drives in one.
Yeah, I agree.
And plays that amazing defense in center field. He's such a fun player to watch. So I think they can. I do like the Bay Stars, even though I think they're a less talented team, but they don't come with all the emotional baggage. Although, you know, who cares about emotional baggage? You know, we'll see. It all matters who wins, you know, wins the games.
Yeah, I think the Tigers are that person who thinks they're better looking than they actually are, and I think the Bay Stars are that humble person who, you know, is happy to be with the one they're with, and I think they'll make do, and I think they're going to get through. I think they're going to beat the Tigers. They have a steadiness about them that I like, and I'm going to pick them. And then on the other side, I think I want to badly pick the Lions for the upset. And I would imagine if they keep the games close because of the power that they have in the depth in the lineup, you know, a number of guys can take you out. Takumi Kuriyama even can take you for a ride if you're not careful with the pitches to him. So I think they're dangerous in that respect. But I'm going to go with the Hawks. I think they recover from all this emotional stuff and they get through to the next round. So that should be fun. You want to make a prediction?
Well, I'm going to go with the Hawks because one of the things the Hawks have is just this. I think it has more to do with Sadahara Oh than it has to do with anything else. But the Hawks have been they had a real powerhouse team really since 1999, and that they played. They won two of the three Japan series that O managed them to, but one of the series they so outmatched the Hanshin Tigers, but it went to 7 games because O mismanaged it. O was a really bad big game manager, and they were really lousy in the postseason under O. And then of course that changed when Koji Akiyama came, and he suffered a couple of. He suffered a couple of playoff losses in his first 2 years. Once to the Fighters and once to the Marines. And then after that, pretty much the Hawks won. I take it back. Actually, he lost 3 times. He lost 3 times. He lost to the Fighters in 2009. He lost to the Marines in 2010. He lost to the Fighters again in 2012. But since then, the Hawks have lost one climax series that they've been in. And they've been in the Japan series since 2014 Now they finished fourth last year, so they didn't, you know, that doesn't count. But from 2014 to 2020, they failed to qualify for the Japan Series once.
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, I like what you said. I
they've got what I'm saying,
man.
Is
that guy was he went for it, man.
But
playoff management style.
Yeah, but ruthless to the point of insanity almost. But you know, but the thing is that this is an organization that has, you know, Tony Barnett talked about, you know, with the Swallows and on the other side, well, of course, that was from a scout's perspective. And Vladimir Valentin said, you know, jumping from the Swallows, where the motto used to be, let's win if we're healthy. Exactly. I mean, that's they used to auction the license for ambulance space outside Jingu Stadium to the highest bidder, you know, because they could make some extra cash doing it. But the Hawks are, you know, as Valentin said, the Hawks are, you know, who cares about whether we're healthy or not? It doesn't matter. We're just going to win.
Right.
And that's, you know, they're the Oakland Raiders kind of, you know, the Al Davis, you know, the walking, talking Al Davis motto, you know, let's just win, baby. And that's what they do. You put them in the postseason, and the team that once couldn't keep from tripping over its own feet in the postseason are now the postseason killers. So I don't think, them finishing in second place is kind of be any impediment to them. I mean, this is something the Oryx, I think they're going to run over the Cebu Lions, or they get past the Cebu Lions, and everyone's going to say, wow, all those pitchers Oryx has got. And then it's going to be a tough slog.
They're going to have to prove it.
It's going to be, you know, even though Oryx handled them pretty well this year, we'll see.
Yeah, none of it matters. You got to prove it in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, a couple of notes. Roki Sasaki did pitch. He threw six innings, I think it was Monday, this past Monday, last week. Six innings, a run, two hits, three walks, a hit batter, five strikeouts, and a balk. Anyway, no decision for him. He was somewhat impressive, but nothing with the velocity of everything or anything like that. He threw 96 pitches, pretty average outing for him. Like I said, six innings. We got more retirements. let's see, where do we start? We can't name them all. We won't go through all of them, especially since we're running low on time. But Atsushi Nomi, I think we talked about. He was retiring. His ceremony was really nice. Motohiro Shima of the Rakuten Eagles / Yakult Swallows, currently Yakult Swallows, he's going to retire. Same with Seiichi Uchikawa, SoftBank / Yakult Swallows, he's out.
Another guy of that former Pacific League guy playing out the string with the Swallows, and actually somebody who contributed to the Swallows is, and then as soon as I say that, his name disappears from my brain. Who is a
Tomotaka Sakaguchi. Let me get through my list. I would have said that.
Oh, well, you didn't put him on my list. That's why I didn't know.
Well, he hadn't announced it yet when I sent you that.
Ah.
Yeah. And then Tomotaka Sakaguchi, Oryx / Yakult Swallows, guy who was probably one of the most least athletic players you will ever see, but are athletic looking players, but he was really athletic, really good hitter, really good outfielder, and he's going to retire. Nobuhiro Matsuda, well, before we get to him, Kenji Akashi of SoftBank said he's retiring, he's out. And then Nobuhiro Matsuda of the SoftBank Hawks, who's 39, is leaving SoftBank, he says, because he wants to continue playing. So that'll be interesting to see where he goes next season. Wouldn't be surprised if he ends up in a Central League team's camp somewhere, trying to make some waves and at least get some more at bats. I don't think he's at 39 going to be that much of an impact player in the free agent market, but he'll be there. Anybody besides Sakaguchi catch your eye there among those guys, or somebody else who retired? Because, like I said, we don't have time to get to all of the guys. I'm just picking out the ones whose names kind of stand out to me.
Well, I just thought it was interesting that, you know, all three of the Swallows guys who are leaving are all guys who basically built their careers in the Pacific League and played it out. Of course, Sakaguchi was one of these guys that Oryx kind of shoved aside at the wrong time, and then they went on to play better. You know, he had the seasons that Oryx would have died to have after Oryx decided it wasn't worth anything.
Yeah, I disagree with you there. I think Seiichi Uchikawa kind of made his career in the Central League, and then
True. I take that back. Yes, he did. Yeah. He did start, but on the other hand, he's the reason I think of him more of with the Hawks is because his, first of all, he's kind of a history maker in that he was the first qualified star to move as a free agent from the Central League to the Pacific League directly. Atsunori Inaba was preceded him, but Atsunori Inaba went to the Pacific League after he failed to get an MLB guaranteed contract. And Uchikawa just moved straight to the Hawks. And he was really the foundation player of the second Hawks dynasty in Fukuoka.
And won batting titles in both leagues. Yeah.
And I think he's a big contributor to the Japan national team. Could very easily have been the MVP of the 2006 World Baseball Classic if they hadn't decided Daisuke Matsuzaka was the bee's knees.
Yeah, was the bee's knees. But yeah, some of those guys. So lots of big news. Again, a big weekend. We got an exciting weekend coming up with the playoffs starting. So looking forward to that. Like I said, I'm going to try to get out to Yokohama. Are you going to be going to any games?
What's that?
You know, what is that? Where they play?
Watching. Well, I see. That's where the reporters sit in the stands and watch on TV, basically.
Yes. What's the point?
Not that I plan to. In fact, I probably am not even going to the Japan series because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make waves when NPB is being so kind to reporters to protect us from players and fans who have COVID.
We want our rights. Yeah, I was talking to somebody. We got to end this year, and then let us go to camps next year, and let's get back to normal because it's time. It's time. It's time. All right, guys. What a great regular season. Like I said, we got one more game tonight on Monday, but it has been a great regular season, and I'm looking forward to the playoffs. I think they're going to be even more fun. So enjoy your baseball.
And see you at the postseason ballpark. Well, I mean, figuratively speaking.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag HighHeat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.